So let me talk again, and let me tell you one thing, dear listeners. You don't mess with my podcast. Don't mess up my podcast. Just can do everything, but not this. And welcome to episode number 176 of Tischlein Deck Dich. What I said yesterday was not that adequate. Jacking up the podcast doesn't make sense. It's messing up, or yeah, could be some other synonym, but jacking off, of course, maybe that's what I was thinking, which would be like masturbating. But jacking up also sounds cool and sounds like and in German the translation is aufbocken, which is what you do when you want to repair a car. You have to put it on a higher place somehow, get something below it, and this is called aufbocken. And there also appears this word bock in it, but doesn't have to do with this bock that I mentioned yesterday, which is like lust. But don't mess with my podcast. Yeah, I tell you this, guys and girls. The sound, nasty sound was in there yesterday, I noticed, but just for some seconds, then it disappeared again. So everything fine today, also looks fine here. The amplitudes, the visual representation of my podcast, my speaking potence, speaking ability. Outflow, nice word. Ausfluss, discharge, effluent, the drain, or the outlet. Ah, this is my outlet, right? So this is my outflow, and today just gonna talk to stay on the tracks and to know that I'm a normal guy, right? I'm normal, like everyone else, and only this episode from yesterday, yeah, this got me into a feeling where I was a little unnormal or questioning myself, and yeah, but gotta pick it up again here and talk about anything but I don't even know what can I say anymore? I was aggressive. This was nice. I got the feeling this was also manly. Ah, this is the point. This is what I want to say. Ah, yeah. Let me go on about this point. Yeah, masculinity. And women, they want us this way, right? They always think about the one... about the one thing. About sex or about the penis. I don't know, but... gotta let it all out here. Somehow this is a point I made in a private recording 1 or 2 months ago, and I always like to go back to the points I elaborate on these unique, precious, private things there, private podcasts for myself. And back then I was talking about a revista, Zeitschrift. Well, about it's like, yeah, a newspaper, but not a newspaper, a monthly paper that I had bought there at the train station, and it treated the life of Pablo Picasso, yeah. And there it said about his private life. Was a magazine about Picasso's life, and like he was from Spain, then living in France, was also a communist, but somehow was some people reproached him that he wasn't really resisting during the time of Nazi occupation. But okay, the main point is about his women, that he always loved women. When he first came like we all do, of course, we as heterosexual men, but I mean for an artist it's somehow different. Then he came into the, well, he was from Malaga, from the south of Spain, and then came to Barcelona. There met some prostitutes, there he drew them, painted them already, and fell in love. But then later went to Paris, and there he met several, always had these long relationships and for some years, and then breakups. But simply the point about this one text or interview, there was an interview with a researcher who had researched the life of several of the women Picasso had loved. And somehow these interviews, I also got this feeling, this is totally what I described yesterday, that today's liberal feminism is painting women as so weak, and oh my god, there come the evil male perpetrators or commit violent acts. Like this one woman from Picasso used to say, what he likes to do is to first rape the woman and then to work. And yeah, it's a little critical, I mean, because rape of course is serious and should be investigated, then be investigated. But in this interview, then this researcher who had written a book about Picasso and his women then said, oh yeah, but she didn't mean it in this way judicially, but somehow, yeah, it revealed something about his personality, that he always needed a new flame, to light a new flame, to inspire his art, and there he just left the last woman. And but okay, maybe this one woman was his lover for many years, or a decade, Françoise Gillot, I think in the 50s she left him, like 53, because he had other lovers and had always promised her to not be with other women, be loyal to her, and I should pick up this revista, this magazine, maybe we could read some of these passages, because I found it, yeah, of course, on hand foreseeable, this today liberal view on Picasso, and we were saying something about destituting the legend, like all these famous artists nowadays are being questioned. No, not destitute. Destitute is like poor. I was looking for a verb which should express that they wanted to correct the high image that everyone has of Picasso and show that also he was in some aspects a violent man or not a moral person. But this is so childish in a way, because we all are like this, and nowadays all these artists are being question whether we can actually go on to enjoy their art because of something they have said or written, like in a private letter or something. And of course this is this stupid, it not even worth discussing. But my point about this Picasso thing was that, yeah, it has to do with the point I'm trying to make about women, that of course this is not such a good situation as an artist like Picasso. You're so famous, and there is going to be in love then always this equilibrium, unequal balance between the two. And yeah, this is a special position for an artist. But what is he going to do? I mean, is he to blame for this? That also, he's an artist, has a sexual desire. My point was only about a picture, that a painting, to be correct. that Picasso painted in his early years, and I gotta be more manly here in my speech note, and this has to do with Picasso also. His look, when you look at photographs of him, the look he has is very hard in a way, but it's also very primitive. And this is how you gotta be as a man. There's nothing special about masculinity. You just have to put up this mask and say like, yeah, I'm the man. And this is what he does, and it's so simple. And it's like he doesn't understand or can't understand why this doesn't seem so hard for men. It's so easy to be extraordinary, like Picasso. You can see in him, of course, he has sexual desire. And then work, and this is a receipt, it's a plan for life. And yeah, I don't want to comment on this rape accusation there, but maybe it wasn't even an accusation. I mean, you can, maybe this woman was saying this like, yeah, the relationship had ended and she was somewhat mad, but it wasn't. I mean, it wasn't an official accusation, just that I found it weird that then the researcher said, oh no, but she didn't mean it in this way judicially. I mean, how would she know how this woman hasn't didn't mean it? But my point is clear and simple about a painting that he made in his early years where his talent could be detected, could already be seen. In this painting, he put his signature, the Je Picasso, I Picasso. And this somehow, this signaled, of course, self-determination or a high, self-esteem. And yeah, somehow, but this. Jo, this letter then Y, with which this Spanish word Jo starts, this somehow reminded me of a penis. Why? I can't tell, but just look at it and you see, yes, somehow it's weird, but then it struck to me, oh, it has to do something with manliness, all this Picasso thing, and especially being so young as he was, I don't know, in his 20s, early 20s. When he first got then to Barcelona and later to France and developed his talent, and that, yeah, it's all about this somehow that women expect something from us, and okay, I don't know what, something, but Picasso feels okay, yeah, I can give it to them, I can have sex, and but at least I gotta give them something else also, like his art, and therefore. Work so frantically, like I said of him, that he left over 50,000 pieces of art, collages, and all kinds of sculptures and pieces. He was a really fanatic worker. And yeah, this feeling I got also with you, girls or women, of course, that you're too shiny to even think about touching and. Could be someday, but always there is this feeling it's going to be a perfect day, or everything is going to be complete once this day would come. You just spent an afternoon, like, I don't know, doing anything and jesting, like, scherzen. And yeah, can't. Can't deny this that yeah. That now I was thinking of you, Zoriana, because you were there today in the office and winter was again at home. Yeah, gute Besserung and so sorry. Or, but yeah, hopefully it wasn't me got you that sick. Just this one time. I mean, yeah, of course, I had this wondered about this whether I had ever made you sick before through my podcast. And with this 153 episode, I first mentioned Doriana back then, and after publishing it, yeah, I noticed. Nothing special, but just one day. I think it was the day after this. Yeah, there were you two girls leaving. And sorry to mention this. This is also not so not so appropriate. But yeah, talking about nauseating topics. And there I heard something from you, Lilia, that, well, you had gone to the toilet and then said something about gonorrhea, or yes, something like, which would mean, diarrhea. I just thought this, I don't even know if it's this word in Ukrainian, but I understood this and thought, oh my god, is she having gonorrhea or gonorrhea? But what is gonorrhea? Or diarrhea? I don't know, but just thought, yeah, maybe my podcast did you this. I know, but here this, I totally mixed this up. I messed it up. No, gonorrhea, of course, is a sexual infection illness. Yeah, this isn't even diarrhea as I thought. Oh, man, this is now embarrassing. Diarrhea, Durchfall. But okay, maybe I just thought that you had said this back then, and I thought, oh yeah, my podcast already made you nauseous. No, but this is now embarrassing. You're totally mixed up. And let's move on. So, what should I tell you in that? I can make my podcasts for you, and it feels like this with this Picasso talk and with this talk about male sexuality nowadays, that it's not even that comfortable to think about actual realization of a love relationship. Yeah, it feels so love cycle is messed up, yeah. With my ex-girlfriend, I somehow have this feeling we're both like this, also two pieces in a dialectical play, what we both like then to harm and injure us, and always can go on like this, but why? Somehow it's thought of like this would foster love and unterfüttern the happiness feeling to pad. This would somehow be padding the actual love feeling. So yeah, but if already this episode 153 made you nauseous, then of course these last ones, they maybe really struck you down. Struck you down, and yeah, hopefully you recover. You know that I'm always would be glad to be there for you. I mean, yeah, also now, like cooking some tea or reading something to you when you're really ill and have to stay in your bed. And you know, it's just a question of the practical implementation. If today there was only Zoriana at the office, then practically this means that my mind is, is wandering off into her direction. But today I was working really, really concentrated because, of course, I also wanted to be more like you, Zoriana, like your role model, but just this episodes were now too ticklish, and at this feeling gotta be a good worker. I, and then this was this get together with the firm, and yeah, therefore I was nervous and felt like, wow, why is it that one gets so nervous just meeting some other people? Or yeah, it's ridiculous in a way, but it's this way in that we are created formed in liberalism so that we are actually scared of meeting other people, and not like in socialism where all this would have been normal and you get introduced in these kinds of worker associations. And this is only a quarterly meeting, but of course I didn't make this proposal to found this Betriebsrat, the Workers' Council, because, yeah, you girls don't want to be this man who you will admire then again and look at me like I'm this Picasso. No, it's just... Now, but also, of course, because I'm just shy and just thought, oh yeah, let's, can't think about it right now, let's just get past this, and sorry that I left you there then, dear colleagues, to go to a beer garden, drink a beer, but I felt like my working capacity is now needed here, and my podcast needs to go back. I mean, we all know it, maybe we all enjoy it, wir wissen es doch alle, hier sind meine Gaben am besten eingesetzt. Something like this I thought when I left and thought, felt a little sorry for you co-workers. Zoriana also, I don't know if you went there, but the other colleague, he went over and we were there last time in spring. It was nice, but today I gotta make some progress here. Don't even know when I'm putting myself under pressure, but yeah. Yeah, under pressure because the last episodes were good, especially yesterday, and you gotta let it also out. I mean, you gotta be that aggressive also. But yeah, my episodes can get always better. Just need to be focused. Like, therefore, with you, Zoriana, I simply need you somehow as... I don't know what even what this is, but you gotta come up with your own theory as an artist. The theory of what a muse is, someone who inspires you or pulls all your forces to produce out of you, work capacity, and then... But... Shouldn't be talking about this, maybe, but with this girl, Sophie, talked about her, the first girl I really fell in love with, and back then I remember that I annotated something. It was just a small note, one sentence, but it was, I think, or maybe it was something in the diary. I remember that I wrote down there, yeah, mich für den Geist, and an anderen für den Körper, that she could have me as a mental lover for her mental well-being and another guy for her body. And this I felt, yeah, this is what already back then was a great idea. Why? Because, yeah, on one hand I feel also the sexual bodily desire and would be great, but somehow this is not enough when you idealize a girl like I did. I saw in her this one girl and thought, but how is this actually realizable, and this, what is this, how's it gonna last? I gotta be sure, gotta come up with something. And back then I didn't think of making art so much, just that, yeah, being an interesting person for her, so coming up with this, maybe giving her something, talking to her, and this would be like a mental massage, maybe. Like these podcasts here, massage for your neurons. Yeah, and I think just nowadays I can understand what I meant back then, because it sounds like you're a total loser. Of course, as a man you always have to conquer. And how can this be? You don't even fancy. Or you fancy... Yeah. You feel also this mental lover will be the real lover. I mean, this other guy, he just can have her body, but this is not the real thing, and the mental lover, yeah, I'll be the guy for her. Yeah. And this is what I'm trying now with this podcast, maybe. I don't want to talk about her, about Sophie so much, because yeah, this is always leaving a mark on your conscience, on your soul. First love, the first love, of course, especially. But why talk about this? I mean, don't want this to come back. It's not like with this Argentinian girl there, at least I was thinking about really maybe contacting her. And there it is, more of a feeling like, yeah, this should or could come back, but of course I decided, I'm really firm as a man also, and decided no, it shouldn't, at least not now, maybe never, but just wanted to have this episode to record, but not think about these girls now anymore, or just think about them like constructing my theory, but not for practical purposes, and be only the mental lover for you girls, that like my Peruvian girl, and then these Ukrainian flowers. Why? So yeah. Don't want her back, or even that Argentinian girl, although she's this one of a kind piece, I thought or felt or knew because of her jauntiness and everything she represented. But still, there you are in the office, and also especially you, Zoriana, because with winter then I already felt like this entanglement, but then you feel there's also more women on the world, how is this possible? And yeah, but therefore exactly, that there's more women and such not exasperating, of course, like I said, yes, the exasperating is ugly, but exhausting maybe, women that simply, yeah, getting also a little exhausted from just looking or thinking. That there's so many of them, these brilliant women already that close, so it's somehow absurd to think that far back also in your personal history, or that far geographically, or yeah, that far. I always think it has to be something special to be romantic. There has to be a Zwickmühle, a double mill, and therefore is created all this pain in love, because you feel, yeah, this is the Zwickmühle. Has to pinch. But I really gotta speed up here. What was I even saying, man? Yeah, it's all logical what I said, and just let me say about Lilia, yeah, let me let some aggression out again, or I don't want to be aggressive, of course, but, I mean, yeah, maybe you want it too, or at least, I mean, you know that I want to be equal to you, Lily, and you know also that it's never going to be this way as long as we're only communicating this way, one direction over this podcast, and they're always going to be superior. Therefore, I might as well be aggressive and even violent in a rhetorical way, of course, not physically. Like they say, no agenda, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. But of course words can hurt, but the point they make with this saying, I think, is very wise, to say, yeah, this is really hurting, being on a killing field, in a war, but words also have to be really sharp at times. For example, in these communist theoretical battles, you only get progress, you only progress when you fight the battles really really determined, and also ridiculing maybe your opponent, like I did to you, Lilia, right? I said this about yeah, when I read these Telegram messages, yeah, it was not at all like this. You said workers rule, or rules by the workers through means of the Communist Party. I described this way the Soviet system, and you said it's a total lie. It was not like that at all. And about this, I wrote something in the show notes, of course, to make it clear to you. I don't want to ridicule you. And Lily, why are you this way? That it gets clear to me every time. I even cite you. I just cite one sentence from you, from your message, that I love you so much, that I'm fitting, or you're fitting it just. This is so clear already in our messages, that they fit together in a way. And why are you this way, Lily, that you just fit to me and somehow, therefore, I also want to run away, of course, because I don't want to be entrapped this way by a woman, and that she knows that she is this majestic, powerful sorceress, like wizard, like disfigured in a song by Eminem, Spacebound. I mean, how could I let this happen? That you source me or use your magic on me? Enchant, yeah, bewitch. But of course, I want everything to happen, that you come back to the office and just that you, yeah, spread your legs again. Like I said, don't know what if it was a signal, but I want to talk about these things, these swinish or vulgar things, and why even, yeah, these associations with sex can never be pushed definitely aside. And this is what I wrote in the poem also, that we were talking there, and somehow Zoriana, she seemed to notice the love associations damming up in all the building was all damming up and clear. There was love there in the air, or it was building up slowly while the first snow began to fall down. The first snow, I don't know, just with you, Zorian, of course, we saw one time the snow falling. But these associations, yeah. I would like you to come back, and I'm really, really sorry for being that stupid or being caught up in my neurotic game with the podcast, and then maybe thinking that also tomorrow I can or couldn't speak to you, or at least not make the first step. But I think, yeah, I've gotten out these resentments now, and maybe this could help then for next week or any week then, to give me this impulse, this kick off. It's not a tip off, as I said, this older colleague gave me. Well, a tip off is in a way also true. A wink is some sort of a sign, a hint, tip off. But I meant really a kick off, something physical, an Anstoß, like in football. And this is always the kick off. One body has to hit the other, and there it gets moving. And this is what I meant, yeah. This mental kick off somehow he gave me, this colleague. I don't know. just a little resented also against him because you know, this should be my private love bubble. Other people shouldn't interfere there and shouldn't put their nose into it. Or, yeah, I feel like he's also wondering what is it with Lilia and Simon and why wouldn't Peter here the perfect couple? And just would like to see your back again and how you're so healthy sitting there, and I would like to unschmiegen, and if only you let me snuggle up or nestle, and then they should maybe also construct construct also chairs for two lovers so they can sit and snuggle up and maybe work. And but what I wanted to read was here clearly from the show notes. I'll have to, I am writing a lot of show notes. I thought I could compose them also into a book, but it's too much work. I rather prefer to, this is the problem, prefer to give you this podcast because it's quick and easy. Die schnelle Lust, the quick lust, but the better lust would maybe be to compose a book, and that takes up a lot of time, but this would then maybe, yeah, be even a greater gift for you, but I can't do it right now. And yeah, where is this episode description? Ah, yeah, I think here we go. Here, from 174, I read the Telegram messages. Yeah, one was maybe unlawful, but I didn't even think of it until publishing. But it's not that clear. At least what I read, there's some decisions by the courts in Germany that yes, it is unlawful to publish a private message from someone else if you just publish it like this on social media. But I don't know, this is different now reading it out. But okay, I'm sorry, but I thought it was somehow necessary at this point to get out my resentments that had really dammed up with this message already earlier. But this message got me then really furious because, yeah, I already mentioned this in 154, that also your formulation of openness and honesty made me think again then is this love direction, and that you were again alluding or pointing or sexualizing this, but without taking these steps for yourself, without saying to my face what you meant. And this of course got me angry, the thing is that with this message, then forget about this openness and honesty. This I already handled this back then in this other episode. But now we're talking about your point of saying, yeah, if a person doesn't come to see you, it's simply because she's not interested in a conversation. And this is a very general statement, of course. On one hand, you could say, yeah, I'm totally overreacting with my interpretation, that I take this as a huge insult also, that you are not only insult, but also an accusation even of harassment at the workplace. And in reality, you're only making a general statement of, yeah, but I shouldn't have reacted that quickly to it. I thought this, just thinking about it some hours or even some days and or not even writing you back anymore, everything would have been fine, of course. We could have gotten back to talking. But still, I wouldn't have just wouldn't have wanted to come to see you again after you wrote this to me. And yeah, this I wanted to make clear. So this is your corridor of retreat, is what I already said, that only you or that strong or fortress to tell me this actually, but in every woman or most of them behave in this manner, waiting, judging, reacting towards men, and then because this corridor is somehow needed, and this is not at least not that good as I thought then today with this whole situation of the cultural situation, the political debates about sexual harassment and rape. There is a good Netflix series, I just wanted to mention this, that it's good to think about rape, like what is it even, it's just unconsensual sex, it's not consensual. And yeah, there was this Netflix series about these high school kids, I don't even remember how it's called, but this, yeah, made an impression to me to think about, it's something that happens and it could be seen like, oh yeah, it's normal, or you don't speak about it in this group of friends because, yeah, why? It's but in reality, of course, it's a crime and you should speak about it and speak up. But just, I think I've made my point that in this cultural situation here in Germany, in liberalism, it's way also exaggerated and creating a space where young women and men alike don't even want to enter the love play because they feel it's more associated with criminality than with lust and pleasure. And this is the real harm that is done to all of us, to millions of people who have to grow up in this environment. And yet, somehow with you, Lilia, then this is a corridor of retreat. I felt then, I thought today that the reason why you are so, in this way at least, a little different from Soriana, that she, at least this one time in the kitchen, made the first step and asked me how I was doing, that you never made this, it's like you were really eyes on, really committed to say this is an iron rule that I never can make this first step. Unshakable. The reason for this is that you always have to leave open this corridor of retreat, so you can see, you can say, oh yeah, I was talking to him, but maybe it could all have been also harassment, could all have been like this. I have always this option to say no, but I never actually wanted to talk to you. Always only reacting to you in your first steps, your proposals of talking, and felt like yeah, accommodated already, and felt like I couldn't evade, yeah. Couldn't evade this, yeah, vermeiden, ausweichen, ausweichen, avoid, yeah, but I like evade, I couldn't evade it, and therefore, and maybe this is a crude thought and this is totally not what it's about, but yeah, from my point of view it looks like this, like this is therefore very hurting then, that you somehow, yeah, I understand totally how you can text something like this, also how you're going to inform the HR department, totally can understand how you can text this out of a mood of anger, but when I then think about how this integrates in your whole behavior and this whole passivity that I was already galling up inside me, this resentment against your behavior, then I feel, yeah, this is, what is this, why are you doing this to me, I never want anything bad, and yeah, my messages weren't so adequate for this time, but still was such a harmony between us, and it's just, I didn't deserve that you treat me this way, and I'm really pissed therefore also that you don't really think like, yeah, fuck this, and don't want to talk to you again, at least want to be that stubborn also and say, yeah, if you don't come then you can sit there for a month and just let it play out and say, yeah, sometime we'll go back, or a comfortable end, and I just hope that can forget you then. But yeah, this this resentment, and now let's read these show notes about revolution and love. It wasn't like that at all. it was just funny the way I read it. Here my comment. Shonus of 174. With my excited voice, I wasn't trying to mock you and ridicule your words. The point is that in the dialectic fight of ideas, there is always created some progress, even when an idea fails or seems to disappoint. Because the material institutionalization of the idea of revolution leads to a different historical situation, from which we can assess anew the overall concept of the proletarian revolution. But this has to be two-sided, progressing from the theory of Marx to the practice of the Bolsheviki. It cannot stay only idealist, then it would be harmless, no threat for imperialism, but only a nice hobby for some academics who feel like the world is so gloomy and they need to keep their soul clean and beautiful from all the dirt of the malicious practical world by criticizing some of the most visible atrocities of capitalism, but at the same time condemning Stalin and the Bolsheviks, and therefore fostering the rule of capitalism, blocking each and every real possibility of political change through the horrification of gulags and so on, as if they had been death camps like the KZ were, the concentration camps run by the Nazis. So this last part is very long, I added this, but it's crucial to understand, yeah, on one hand there's these Marxists, these idealist Marxists, they are this way, this is their hobby to complain about capitalism, but at the same time always not forgetting to complain also about Stalin and about how real communism ruined then the ideal concept of communism that was so great and could have been implemented if only people would understand that it's not that bad like what Lenin and Stalin tried. And but this is the wholly wrong theoretical approach. This way we're never going to get there, even to convince the masses of the necessity of revolution, because the masses are actually not that stupid. They're smarter than these idealist academics, and they know that actually, yeah, what Stalin and Lenin did, this has something to do with communism, and you can't just wipe this away and say, oh no, let's start anew, let's make a clean cut and say, yeah, communism has never been tried. Yeah, it has been tried, and it was a success, although not a perfect success, and maybe there were some lies, like you pointed out, Lilia. I want to believe everything that you say, of course. Therefore, discussed with you also about these topics. It felt then also hurtful that you said you don't even want to discuss communism because you can't change my point of view. But okay. This discussion is always productive. This is the dialectical fight. On one hand, dialectics could mean the exchange between theory and practice. Marx does it in theoretical work. Of course, he was also member in parties and so on, gave speeches. But on the other hand, the practice. Practical revolution and instituting a new model of state, new model of producing socialistically and in the Soviet Union in this case, of course, also developing for the first time a really heavy industry that didn't exist before. So this is then the practice, and it's always better this way. The idea gets fostered, and no matter on this way, there are also bloody stains, and it's all history. It's also ruled by chances and accidents, and the power of the great imperialist nations, their financial potence, is always going to be a problem, of course, in that early phase of for a socialist state, and these capitalist countries trying to bring them down. But yeah, this we can assess anew the overall concept of the proletarian revolution. Yeah, we can't just deal with the ideal sphere, and it has to be real, and it has to be this way exactly, for the reason that then people say, oh no, I don't like this, this is disappointing, this was not my idea of communism. But this fight then has to go on, and we have to, as communists, point out how this system is actually already better than capitalism, although not perfect. But we shouldn't retreat there and say there could be an ideal communism. It could all be done, just Stalin was, just these Bolsheviks of the early times were too stupid. Now this would be really stupid to say this, and yeah, let's go on reading. So I'm grateful for your reply and your determined stance that you took, telling me that I had a wrong image or concept of the revolution, and in practice it was not like the dreams of Marx that the working class would be in charge through the help and guidance of the Communist Party. Because with your rejection of my theoretical approach, you are right in a way, and of course you have a point that I never got to live in this system, but your family did. The crucial point is that throughout our discussion we enter in the dialectical process of sharpening ideas, through which eventually the idea will prevail and survive the ugly fights of its actual realization in the practical world, according to Hegel. Hegel, who was born here in Stuttgart, I might mention. Therefore, I am thankful for your words and would have liked you to tell me more, even though, as you pointed out sharply, my standpoint was very established. But it's always good to talk, and it even leads to philosophical progress, but it has to be somewhat aggressive and a real fight in a way. Thinking abstractly, we can replace the word revolution with love and think about how this great outbreak of agitation and unrest should develop dialectically, alternating between joy and frustration, maybe. So then, therefore, then now would be the time of joy, obviously, because already so many months we were in the phase of frustration. Lilia, and I have no more words to tell you, just you can think about this yourself, right? How do we now replace in this text revolution with love, and think about it's always better to practically implement it and not just keep it in this ideal sphere. And there you see something else, and yeah, of course it's going to be disappointing, and you're going to think, wow, this was totally a lie, what you promised me this love would be like, or this was not like this at all, this was this holy love bubble and the wholesome bubble, no, it was making me even more kaput. And this is always the question in love, like in one song I played for my ex-girlfriend when we first got together, episode 45, that there it states in the lyrics, well, reißen wir uns gegenseitig raus oder reiten wir uns rein. This is to mean, is asking whether the two lovers are doing each other any good. carrying out. Oh, no, but this is not the thing. It's not the exact translation. Well, to write into problems or to get each other out of the problems. It's not clear which one is it. Is love even deepening the negative aspects of our personalities, or are we helping each other? But it can never be known until you practically try it. And I wanted you to think about this text, right? And so with this, don't want to end so soon today, because although I feel I'm not in such great mood like yesterday, this was yeah, but don't mess with my podcast, right? Come on, gotta go and move on. With this work, Macron, there is this one turn of events I wanted to describe here. Also, to remind myself of it, maybe someday I should continue working on it, but right now don't even have time to work so much on my writings. Not even on Zori and Lily. But yeah, you always feel like, yeah, Picasso, you need to kindle the next flame. Need to light up the next flame. The next project. But let's talk a little about this. I was thinking, and my girlfriend, she said then something very interesting about my idea that I didn't quite understand. But first, gotta tell you, Macron is the French head of the state, the president. He's a handsome guy, obviously. But therefore also, yeah, makes a lot of sense to choose him as the main character, because you gotta be like this, like Picasso, gotta be self-assured and having a strong look like Macron, penetrating with your eyes and piercing, like I wrote in this one poem I published on the last episode. Sorry, gotta annotate this poem to be read out someday. Macron, he travels then to Ukraine to discuss the state of politics and the affairs of politics with Zelensky, but then he is struck by a lightning, of course, lightning of affection and tenderness when first introduced to or confronted with the secretary there in the front office of Zelensky. And her name is Sapi. Well, that's her short name, her nickname. But I just thought of this city in Ukraine, Zaporizhia, somewhat like this. Also talked about it with you, Lilia, to summer fabric of cars back in the time of the Soviet Union. And this Sapi, she's there, working there for Ukraine, and she's so patriotic, therefore also committed to her country, and all her friends are already leaving to study abroad, but she wants to stay there to serve her country. And yes, somehow she gets talking with Macron, and well, this somehow develops. Of course, I don't even know how I should write this whole part, because yeah, I don't know how to talk to him, how this whole phase can start or take off then. But eventually then Macron gets so incited, like the desire and yearning for her is burning him, and therefore at this second or third trip there to Kiev, he simply takes her with him, or steals her. There's a great Greek sculpture about this, stating something about a stealing a woman, or abduction, I think, Entführung. Oh my god, I'm so confused. But just the sculpture I saw then on Twitter, a photo of it, this was so beautiful, like some male hand grabbing a woman by the hip, by the hip or by her waist, and abducting her, taking her away. And this was part of some Greek myth, and such a beautiful sculpture. But when I saw this, I felt again that yes, somehow it has something erotic, that the man should be this perpetrator, or the active part would be so excited that he simply has to grab this woman. And therefore, yeah, Winter, I understand everything. Don't think that I blame you in any way, just because you're so important to me. Therefore, I also had to make this point and let out all my resentment, but I wouldn't have made this with any other woman, because no one else would have been that worthy and dignified like you are. It's so clear that no one would understand me, and you are really the one person I can tell everything I feel. Yeah, but I was drifting off, digressing. This sculpture was simply something beautiful, aesthetically pleasing. Maybe I can find it. But the main point is about Macron. Then he's abducting Zappi from Kiev. And this then leads to all sorts of political tensions. And I don't know what, I didn't really write this part, how is this, but this is the crucial point, that this is the fraction then between Macron and his Western friends, his buddies, like Biden and Scholz. But there, when he steals this woman, then somehow the split is produced, and Macron has to change. He goes over into the team of Putin, and teams up with them. And yeah, somehow he takes her to France, and Zelensky is then furious, outraged. And yeah, thinks that somehow maybe the Russians have her to get some secret information. And what I wrote then was that Ukraine declares war to France, because then yeah, he gets to know that actually she's in Paris, and Macron just abducted her. But this is so stupid, just that it's not stupid in a way, because it would be romantic, right? Who wouldn't like to be the cause for a war? I mean, as a woman or a man also, I would like to be this and say, yeah, this was this whole, the whole precious thing that everyone was riled up about, and therefore even these two people got into wars, like the War of Troy, the ancient Greeks, of course, this was also about a woman being abducted, right? This was somehow the one man from Crete or from somewhere. I didn't read all this, but it's interesting. Should be, of course, nowadays classical education is not that, not taught that much at schools anymore. And my girlfriend then said, yeah, this could, this, well, this doesn't sound realistic. This could have been possible, but maybe 60 years ago, or, and I didn't understand this, why 60 years? 60 years, we were already in the modern age, and such a thing, I don't think that could occur in modern age. Of course, we're also, well, we're all somehow standardized, and such a eccentric abduction couldn't really take place in the modern age. Therefore, I thought just, yeah, what? No, it's like 2,000 or 6,000 years ago, maybe this could have taken place, but not that shortly. And with all this, I'm just hoping to make your mouth water, dear listeners, so you know I have a lot more to give, but right now I can't finish all my works, and I'm really only concerned about you, Winter, in a way. Yeah, only that I don't hurt you too much, but I also want to think about Zoriana, but in a different way. It's totally not touching our bond, I feel. But maybe you feel differently, but I have to also provoke you. And, yeah, so... But what would even be an abduction? I mean, at least we're talking about consenting adults, right? Zappi would also be falling in love with Macron, but why would he be abducting her? But think about, while you think about this, dear listeners, let's listen to a song. Yeah, I've got a lot more to give. I feel like I want to talk on for a little more, but not that long. Just listen, because I now was talking about abduction. Let's listen to this and hip abduction. Yeah, this sculpture. This hip abduction is a band which is, I don't know, a hippie band or... some kind of a surfer band, I get the impression. I watched this video for the song, and this song is great, it's amazing. Enjoy it. It's called, yeah, it's gonna be all right, or something like this. Everything's gonna be all right. And please, Winter, only understand that I only could crave for this one thing in life, that you're going to tell me that everything's going to be all right.
back, still dreaming about yesterday. Keep your head up, stay true, it's our policy. It will be alright, we'll get by. We'll undertake time to free the mind like two American hippies. It will be alright, we'll keep our head high. Never stop following this dream inside. And we can be in it.
So great song, wow, but this also didn't boost up the energy so much, right? I have a lot of more songs to give, and there's a special booster, gotta play some day from a powerful girl called Jenny Rostock, Jennifer Rostock, German singer, and she sings about her microphone, like it's a source of power for her, like for me also. She sings that no one's gonna ever going to quit her microphone, and just she's going to hold on to it, defend it until the last. Like also I feel I don't give a fuck, like I said yesterday, I just want to make my podcast and don't mess with my podcast, right? No, so, sorry, I'm a little jacked up today, yeah. Don't jack this up. Now, one or more, two thoughts before really, but why? Why am I that defensive, right? Because I feel like I've gone too far yesterday, but I have to push myself even further. So let's put no limit on this, just, shouldn't say just so much. Simply, candidly, would like to convey the message that to actually talk to you. Oh God, Soriana, or to you, Delia. Of course, this would be the bourgeois way of dealing with the sexual drive, is what I annotated here. But I rather like this proletarian way. I don't know. Here in the podcast, I don't know what am I even saying, don't understand even my own words, but doesn't matter. It would be somehow bourgeois, and this has to do with the counterculture, with having a girlfriend at my arm, like my parents are going to see me, like expressed in this poem. Somehow I want to counter this expectation, the expectation of success or the definition of happiness, and this would be too bourgeois. Somehow you feel this flow of energy going over, passing from one person to another. And this is so intense to feel. But that you have to talk and find some words and deal with it and be immersed in this sprightly joy. But yeah, why? It's no problem, right? It feels like a problem in liberalism where we're all competitors and yeah, try to compete on the market to get our own product sold, like our own love potential, our soul even, our bodies and sexual organs, all has to be sold there on the liberal market, and therefore it's all so hurtful. But Lilia, you Diana, that your body of course is majestic, and it was totally not true yesterday what I said in an ironic way or in some way, that your body is not good enough, and this is of course all part of this hurtful accusations. But I don't even know how your body is, just that I need it to be somehow driven towards me, or angeschmiegt, as I said, cuddled up to me. And there maybe I can measure it, put my hands on it, and abduct. But palpate your hips. Palpate is betasten or stroke, steichen. Yeah. And yeah, I don't even know what do I mean with this point that I annotated here. Okay. That I'm childish. Yeah, this is what I mean. Childish. And don't see why I shouldn't be childish. I mean, you, for example, Zorian, you look, although you're physically very young, you weigh like a baby, maybe said this, but you also look very adult and strong, belastbar. And maybe you then, Lilia, are in this way a little more childish and durable. Already mentioned this about you. But we both, this is this isomorphism I was talking about between you and me, that yeah, there comes up this problem. We are more childish, but then this was also a challenge and a problem that Zoriana then entered to the office, and she sits there and she simply shows us how you can be natural and can be working, and somehow it seems the working has also to do with sex. At least it felt like this in my discourse in the episode 14, Dear Girls. I said that we have to understand, you and me, Lily, that Zorian is straightforward and she's like this working, and it felt like I interpreted, or when I heard this afterwards, listened to it, she's simply working, and therefore somehow she's always going forward, and nothing can stop her, and therefore it's natural in a human being to feel a sexual drive, also to follow it, to deal with it somehow, and it has to do with this, that she's this way, going forward, and therefore she's showing this to us, and showing to us too that we are in a way very childish, at least how we behave beginning from January, ignoring each other. Yeah, and of course, probably you were then also thinking about this all the time. What if he simply goes with the next girl, or could fall in love just with the next Ukrainian girl, the more beautiful, or just the next one, as in this poem. And this is what I thought already, or wrote down already in early January. Was then the first time I dared to look at you again, when you were there talking with Zorian, and our boss had just come by, and combined, and said that apparently there should come two more co-workers from Ukraine, from your firm, and they should be there soon, but two guys, he said, I think. And then you, Lilia, asked, guys or girls? And this made me, of course, jealous then, thinking there could come guys, some guys, and then you would rather like to go with them. They would lead you by the arm, prefer to sit with them. But of course, also it can't be boys now, that can't leave Ukraine. But then you came over to discuss this new possibility with Zoriana, and I somehow looked at you. And yeah, dare to look at you again, like from beginning of January, I didn't even want to. Sorry, have to find this one piece where I annotated back. Here I have it. Yeah, this is nice. This I annotated when you came over and were discussing this, and then said, yeah, Abbas, he said to Zoriana, he said guys or then girls, and yeah, but somehow also thought you were saying this to provoke me, and so and how did I even get to this situation? But it doesn't matter now. Yeah, the next one. Yeah, this is what I wrote here. Yeah, let's read this. Lilia sendete Zeichen. Und nun möchte ich mich davon losmachen. Auch wenn man eigentlich nicht mehr kann, ist man einmal in diesen Fischernetzen eingefangen. Ich werde mich sicher nicht von einer Frau so anschauen lassen, dass sie von mir denkt und in meinen Blick hineininterpretiert, ich sei so ungezügelt in meiner Wollust, dass sich mein Blick schnell und wahllos an die nächstbeste ukrainische Braut hefte. Und ja und nein. Also so lasse ich mich nicht anschauen, mag es stimmen oder nicht. Interessanterweise schaute ich jetzt Lilia zum ersten Mal seit langem richtig an, da sie gegenüber bei Zoriana stand, gerade während ich diese Zeilen runtertippte. Sie war viel mit dem Chef beschäftigt, was schön ist, so wird sie Teil des Räderwerks. Und nun sagte der Chef, dass noch zwei Guys von dieser ukrainischen Firma kommen werden und er von Lilia die Nummer der Chefin dort brauche. Zoriana fragte dann, Guys? Um dann zu erklären, I mean two, not one. Weil der Chef meinte, ja, Guys or girls, whatever. Ah, my God, this is complicated to explain, but yeah, maybe let's read in English, then I can explain what is meant here at the end. That it was you, Zoriana, who wanted to know this, Guys or girls. Yeah. But maybe, yeah, it's understandable if you thought like this, that you shouldn't think of me. Couldn't it have to be loyal to a friend? Therefore, normal to think, yeah, but when is some other guy going to show up? Let's read this. Lilia sent signs, and now I want to get rid of it, even if you can't really do it anymore, once you're caught in these fishing nets. Möchte mich losmachen, loslösen. I certainly won't let a woman look at me in such a way that she thinks of me and interprets my gaze as... Sorry. There are already too many pauses again, I feel, yeah. So, I certainly won't let a woman look at me in such a way that she thinks of me and interprets my gaze as being so unbridled in my lust that my eyes quickly and indiscriminately cling to the next best Ukrainian bride. And yes, and no. So I don't let myself be looked at like this, whether it's true or not. And yeah, this is the point of typing these lines. I feel like, yeah, can't deny it. It's somewhere it's true that my gaze then goes on. But don't want that you know this or that you think this of me. And this is hurting also. And but I don't know. The last paragraph now. Interestingly, I actually looked at Lilia for the first time in a long time, as she was standing across from Zoryana just as I was typing these lines. She's been busy with the boss, which is nice, so she becomes part of the wheel work. And now the boss said that two more guys will come from the Ukrainian company and that he needs Lilia's number. That he needs the number of Lilia's boss there, of her contact. Zoryana asked guys, and yeah, then she asked guys, but then the boss said, well, guys or girls, whatever. But then Zoryana clarified, I mean two, not one. So to clarify that your question was not about their gender, but was about whether it's two or one. But until now, no one came. I don't know why. This was already in January or February. Okay, unbridled. Yeah, it's like unbounded. And yeah, I could read a lot of these texts, I thought right now. I'm always writing like this at work these last month. I should pick up something like this. Starfish text also was writing this there. Yeah, should compose something. But for now, I think it's enough, at least from this. But now that I've talked about this, I also can at least tackle this last point on my list, last note, because it's related to this, what I said. So there's this question, two new guys might come, and it's always not about competition in this situation, I feel, but it's about this subjectivity. This is the point about Picasso, that, yeah, he's this man, the subject, he's self-determined, somehow subject, not only an object being pushed around by society that's putting him in this or that place. And this is what Wim wants to see, right? This is what I meant. Not that they're like thinking about sex all the time, although it might be also the case, but that they're thinking of a man as a subject and they want to see this in him, this liberty or freedom of will, and this determination, power, and yes, something that they need to see a man is that glorious or victorious. Like in the song Majesty appears this word. Victorious or is, well, whatever. And yeah, this is obvious, the subject, but there could come new co-workers, and I don't even know who they are, but who are you even, Zoryana, and you, Lilia? But yeah, Lilia, I feel I got to know you already a little and feel like, yeah, we're equal. Somehow you have many friends. It seemed to me, you seem like a social person, although you're a little shy there. The workplace, it's understandable, but seems like, yeah, you like to chat a lot on Telegram and have your friends there, also in Germany. But then is this question, who is this other? And in love, in falling in love, Luhmann, the great sociologist from Germany here, writes that you have to penetrate the other one. Love is somehow a procedure to penetrate each other's personality, to really grasp it and embrace it, like in a hug. But yeah, today's love is maybe too idealist. This is what I feel also, Lily. I just want to hug you materially and not think about this whole thing penetrating your soul or thinking about who you are actually, how many friends do you have or what are your hobbies. And I, of course, I like to hear about it and always like to listen to you, but just most prioritized thing would be to hug you and love you materially, to just stroke you. Yeah, and somehow there is this question, or somehow it got to me that you will always be wondering when you meet a new person that feels, makes you feel so enchanted and like so curious and like this is the most singular person in the world. And there you always feel this, I gotta know, who is this actually and what is this personality composed of? And this is in a way absurd also, because we're all more or less equal, and liberalism makes us feel like we have to be individualistic, but we don't even get there, don't even get to be at least a subject like Picasso used to be. At least he worked a lot and expressed a lot of his inner malice, maybe through this work and in his art, poured it in there. Like I also, at least do many podcasts. And podcast also starts with P, like penis or like Picasso. But just as I know, we're really wandering freely today, and. Yeah, what can I say anymore? So it's about a mutual penetration that each one has to grasp and somehow understand and get to know the other one. But then it felt, it feels always weird, like, yeah, with you, Lilia, that I have to leave a stronger mark on you than your friends, of course. I have to be this one singular piece, but how can I achieve this? How can I be sure to make this one-of-a-kind impression? You never can be sure. And yeah, now it sounds ridiculous, because with all these episodes, of course, somehow it's something outstanding. Of course, I can now think that no friend or boyfriend will ever give you something like this. But yeah, back then it wasn't like this, like in October, and therefore this doubt was real. Therefore this incited me and motivated me then, of course, to get developed my work habits in this manner. Yeah, and can't say anything more to this. Yes, one point more, that with you, Soriana, somehow, as I said, you're a blank page, which is something very positive, of course, not to be meant as you're passive or, but that, yeah, for this reason somehow it feels like it wouldn't be that hard to penetrate you in this personal way. That, yeah, you have your friends and your family and it'd be interesting, I don't even know that much about you. But in a way I feel, yeah, you're a blank page, you would be ready to listen to me and my stories, and somehow I could grasp you and it would feel not that strenuous, back-breaking, not that hard like with Lilia maybe, but I don't know what I mean by this. Just this thought, this ran through my head. And this doesn't mean that this love would be better or I was thinking about this. No, only that for some reason there's always this question, who is this other subject? I mean, yeah, we also have to think of you girls as subject and wanting to see in you this one-of-a-kind subjectivity. And I just want to be an empty recipient, also blank page for you to put your ink onto me. And yeah, there's nothing really interesting in my life, I can tell you. Of course, the podcast makes it appear like it was. But no, my writing, this is what I like the most. and I'm in a way proud of, maybe even more than a podcast. But apart from this, there's nothing that would be really memorable or interesting in my life. So I'm ready to be filled by you, by each of you, or yeah, and you can't enter this world of the other completely, or it's also normal that he or she wants to keep parts secret from you. This was also the point of Robert Fallow, that there could be parts or rincones, corners, where you don't want the other to look or to see you. Yeah, maybe you feel this, also this countering, that you would always try to counter then the look of the other, this gaze that can be hurting, and therefore maybe it's wiser to even block the possibility of the other examining and noticing some things about your life or your personality that maybe you girls feel. Sorry, what am I doing here? My tea can. Maybe you feel, you girls, that I notice everything about you, and yeah. Especially, I hope, Zoriana, that you felt flattered of what I said about that. There's also a touch of evil in your gaze sometimes, but yes, this has to do with work. It's not always just when you're so caught up in your work, and I don't know. It also you also remind me in a way of this other woman I was working with, and she was sitting on your place, and she was also sometimes putting her forehead into wrinkles when she was thinking really hard and caught up in some programming problem she was solving, and could see, oh, there's so much tension in her now. But I don't see this in you such a lot, only that I see sometimes that well, hopefully you don't feel incommodated, you're so natural and should continue to be like it. Sometimes I feel, oh, this is a woman I wouldn't want to get in your way when you're really on your way, and yeah, attacking one of those tasks, it's really gotta be gentle and not upsetting you. Yeah, and so yeah, I maybe perceive everything you feel, but no, I'm not that special, and other persons can also come up with maybe even better perceptions or better or other descriptions of your features. And yeah, with this I worked down my list really here. We can read maybe a poem I've prepared. I've written here a list with all the short texts or poems I could read or should read. Yeah, this is one about the Büro Hengst. I don't like this so much because but the one thing you just gotta know about it, Lilia, is that I was thinking about two office co-workers and was inspired by, I don't know, maybe you and this other colleague. But art is not that direct. It's always about an indirect space, and it's never this or that person that you aim at. Therefore, maybe you are not the real person of you, is not even this Lilia and this Soriana. You two are maybe not even congruent. It's never. But there, I wrote this text, and the simple point about it, it's very biological, explicit. The simple fact about it is that it's a great feeling that as a lover or a mental lover, I can also feel, I can let you be abducted by others, and let this thought be possible of others also loving you. And um, It's about this constellation in the office. Yeah, I was thinking, how absurd is it if you're sitting there? Somehow they're sitting opposite, this vulvas, the vagina and the penis sitting opposite, but they don't find together. And why is it? Although they're so close and it would be so natural, but why are there all these barriers and frontiers in these social circumstances in capitalism? And it's logical to then think, yeah, well, masturbation, where I brought into my discourse some episodes ago, that you think then, yeah, we all like it or sometimes do it, but how stupid is it that you not even talk to a person that could be attractive or nice, simply to talk to there at the office, and doesn't even have to have an erotic intention, just that it's nice to see the glow, the shining face. And the point is about liberalism, yeah. The superstructure is so over-sexualized that it always has a sexual connotation when you think about something like this. Like even a seemingly innocent conversation. To start there. Maybe therefore it feels so blocked. But I don't want to read this text because, no, always since I wrote it last September, always made me feel, but shouldn't make me feel this way, right? Because I'm taking the female stance in it, and it's important to develop and discover the female lust for men, and this is my whole purpose in life or in my art. Right now, at least, I feel this would be greater or more important than my own satisfaction, because of course could try it now, but maybe in these circumstances not even that pleasant. So we first have to construct other societal boundaries, and then we can get to the practice and actually love. So this is in a way a great poem, but somehow I feel reluctant to read it right now. Yeah, let's read a text about Sigmund Freud. This text talks also about, well, this text is schizophrenic, you know. In a way, it's like a lot of my text, like also this text about the office, that it first starts with a reflection on the position of the author. Yeah, who am I really? Am I a man or a woman? This is how this poem starts. But this text about Freud starts also like this, like the author writing that, oh yeah, I know that I could, that many will love me for the art I do. That I will be loved. Yeah, like Picasso, there's always going to be lovers, of course, as an artist. When you do the stuff that is maybe adequate. Yeah. And so it reflects on the position of the author, who can always create more and therefore make more people fall in love. But yeah, let's read this text in German, please. Freud, dieser österreichische Schlingel. Ich weiß ja doch, dass mich viele lieben werden für das, was ich immer wieder neu aus meinen Fingern rausfließen lassen kann. Dieses Schreiben, es ist ein zu scharfes Schwert, mit dem ich meine Konkurrenten niederstrecke. Und das darf einfach gar nicht sein. Dass die Frauen immer nur den Mann lieben, der Aufhebens macht, einen Eindruck schindet, der Aufheben um sich macht, dass die Frauen immer nur den Mann lieben, der Aufheben. Ich bin mir nicht sicher mit diesem Wort hier, Aufheben, Aufheben oder Aufhebens, viel Aufhebens, egal. Ja, aber das Grundproblem. Also, der einen Eindruck schindet. Diese Subjektivität. Und was anderes als Eindruck schinden ist Schreiben. Ich bin doch geradezu auf den Effekt bedacht. Früher träumte ich davon, Philosoph zu werden und meine schwerwiegenden Gedanken in dicke, beruhigend schwerfällig aussehende Bücher zu pressen. Aber das ist vorbei. Die Kunst, die Sucht, die Sehnsucht nach den Musen hat mich. Und diese Sehnsucht ist eine Suche nach dem Sozialismus, nach dem Gleichsein. Wenn es nur eine Gleichheit im Begehren, in der Niedrigkeit und im Schweinsein geben kann, dann bitte. Freud schrieb, wir Modernen heiligten das Objekt, wohingegen die alten Griechen den Trieb selbst feierten, der uns wiederum anstößig erscheint, worüber nur die Vorzüge des edlen, glänzenden, vollmachenden Objekts hinweghelfen. Ja, kurze Bemerkung hier, also irgendwie scheint es ja, das ist nicht so gut wiedergegeben, dieses Zitat von Pfaller, der da auch Freud zitiert, aber jedenfalls, für uns ist es heute so, ja, dieser eine Körper oder diese Geliebte, jedenfalls, die ist so, dieses eine Puzzlestück, dieses individuelle Subjekt, ja, das ist schwierig jetzt, Subjekt oder Objekt, aber da fällt ja beides zusammen in der Liebe, diese andere Person ist gleichzeitig klein A und groß A, sagt Lacan. Das Klein-A, das wir begehren, diese Sahneschnitte oder Erdbeerschnitte, jedenfalls eine Kirsche oder was einfach so lecker wäre jetzt, um sich einzuverleiben. Und auf der anderen Seite ist da aber dieser Groß-A, dieser andere, der uns wahrnimmt, beurteilt und der uns ganz aufnimmt, mit seinem Sein völlig durchblickt, penetriert und uns einfach so wahrnimmt, wie wir sind als Person oder so, wie wir sein wollen, einfach in seinen Augen der sein, der wir sind. Und deshalb dieses Subjekt. Und egal, jetzt aber Subjekt, Objekt, dieser andere jedenfalls, der ist es, der ist in dieser Liebessituation jetzt ja unser Objekt und der rechtfertigt das alles, die Liebe, oder der ist es das, was uns darüber hinweg hilft zu denken, dieser Trieb ist aber auch ganz schön schweinisch, oder ja, was ist das nochmal mit dem Sex, hör mal, diese christlichen Jahrtausende haben doch einen Eindruck auf unserem Bewusstsein hinterlassen, dieses Naserümpfen und die Missgunst gegen diese Form der Lust gegen die natürliche Sexuallust. Und da also sagt Freud jetzt ja gut, bei den Griechen da war es anders. Die feierten den Trieb selbst, dieses sich immer weiter drehende Trieb, das ist ein Trieb, der treibt dich an und feierten das in dem Sinn dadurch, dass sie den Göttern ja auch so sexuelle Anwandlungen unterstellten und wie die immer wieder die Menschen da rauben, sich einfach rausgreifen, schöne Frauen da von unten oder Halbgötter und Menschen und Götter, jedenfalls die Götter da noch viel besessener und zügelloser sind als die Menschen. Und dadurch wird ja auch so ein Vorbild kreiert und der Trieb wird gefeiert. Und übrigens diesen Punkt, ja, den erwähnte ich schon mal in Folge 6 oder so von Tischlein deck dich. Oder irgendwas Ähnliches von Pfaller jedenfalls. Und da wurde mir auch so klar, hey, ja, ich habe ja wirklich das in mir, ich kann das wirklich ausdrücken, was Pfaller da beschreibt. Und ja, okay, das würden die meisten Leute noch nicht mal verstehen. Die meisten Leute verstehen überhaupt nicht, worüber ich hier rede. Aber diejenigen, die es verstehen, die werden doch verstehen, dass es schon was ganz Besonderes oder was wirklich, also das wirklich was sehr Wichtiges ist, was ich da ausdrücke und was ich von Pfaller wiedergebe. Das dachte ich damals in Folge 6, war es, glaube ich, ja. Und da dachte ich, wow, das ist ja echt eine Wunderwaffe mit diesem Podcast auch. Ja, das streckt alle nieder noch, meine Konkurrenten. Da werde ich ja wirklich glänzen, so ein Mann, also ja, wie ein richtiges Subjekt glänzen jedenfalls. Und ja, das wurde mir damals schon irgendwie klar. Das war gerade in der Zeit, wo Corona anfing, im März 2020. Aber ja, da ging es auch eben darum, die früher feierten noch den Trieb, die Griechen. Und wir heute haben die Zugänge zur Lust eher blockiert und verstellt. Da wird man gereizt und tausendfach bombardiert über die Medien, sagt Michel Houellebecq. Aber der Weg dahin zur Befriedigung ist verstellt und blockiert. Und es ist deshalb ein einziger Spießrutenlauf, ein einziges Leiden. Und Ja, aber das ist ein wichtiger Unterschied. Also, diese Griechen sagten dann also, der Trieb ist das Gute, wohingegen das Objekt unserer Liebe, ja gut, das hat immer Merkel, ist ja auch nur ein Mensch, ne? Diese oder jene, also ja, aber darüber hilft das hinweg, dass es ja der edle Trieb ist, den selbst die Götter feiern und würdigen. Und wir sehen das jetzt heute wieder genau andersrum und sagen, ach, das ist diese Persönlichkeit, diese Schneeflöckchen, dieses eine Objekt da. Und vielleicht deshalb sagt Lacan so etwas, sagt Lacan jedenfalls, dass die Schönheit heute in der Liebe nicht mehr den Platz hat, die sie früher hatte. Also damals war es vielleicht noch wichtig mit der Schönheit. Oder war irgendwie natürlich, ja, Schönheit springt einen doch an. Das ist ja genau dieser Trieb, dass man spürt, da geht genau das an, was vorher noch nicht an war, bevor ich diese Person angeschaut habe. Und das hat jetzt nichts direkt mit dem sexuellen Verlangen zu tun, aber es ist irgendwie schon damit verstrickt. Und irgendwie, ja. Und heute ist aber so, dass wir die Schönheit vielleicht noch fein, aber sie ist nicht mehr mit der Liebe verquickt, so sehr verstrickt, sagt Lacan. Und ich denke, es hat genau damit zu tun, dass wir auch so idealistisch sind und Schönheit ist ja irgendwie nur was Materielles. Und das wäre jetzt zu wenig für dieses eine Schneeflöckchen, für diese eine, das vollmachende, glänzende Objekt. Aber ja, da habe ich jetzt sehr viel ausgeführt dazu, zu diesem kurzen Punkt. Und jetzt aber weiter im Text. Wir sind hier immer noch im einleitenden Teil, wo es um diese Metareflexion auf der Schriftebene geht. Aber das wirklich Wichtige ist der hintere Teil des Texts, wo es dann abdriftet in eine Art reaktionär, und das ist ja gut, diese reaktionären Ressentiments mal ausdrücken, ausbuchstabieren. Jedenfalls ein Ressentiment eines Mannes, der da fühlt, er lebt ungefähr in der heutigen Zeit. Er ist wohl eher konservativ gesinnt bis reaktionär. Und er sehnt sich zurück nach der Zeit von vor Freud und als damals, also auch zu der Zeit von Robert Musil. Deshalb schrieb ich das, weil ich da auch gerade wieder das las, beziehungsweise bei Audible hörte, das Der Mann ohne Eigenschaften. Sehnt sich also einfach zurück zur Zeit von Kaiser und König und so, und ne, dieses kaiserlich und königliche österreichische Reich. Und das lesen wir uns hier bitte noch durch. Der Philosoph, so sozialistisch er auch sein mag, erhebt sich ja doch über das niedere Volk, zu dem er spricht, das er bewegen und aufklären will. Allein der Künstler ist darüber hinweg und sieht die Aufklärung der Massen als Flausen jüngerer Generationen an, mit denen es jetzt in der Reife des Schaffens keine Zeit mehr zu verlieren, keine Kraft zu verschwenden gelte. Der Künstler steht ganz im Volk und möchte von ihm als seinesgleichen erkannt werden. Ich bin auch nur wie ihr, seht her, ich stelle mich sogar aus, reibe mich ein mit was immer für Dreck, damit ihr es glaubt. Denn scheinbar, ja, aber nur dem Anschein nach, stehe ich ja über euch, weil ich so viel denken und schreiben kann. Dieser Druck von allen Seiten. Wie ein U-Boot tauche ich ab und bin doch nicht außer der Gefahr. Von allen Seiten drückt das Wasser und will mich aufschlitzen. Ja, ich glaube, das ist jetzt dieser Übergang. Hier geht es jetzt über in dieses reaktionäre Bewusstsein. Und das macht ja auch sehr viel Sinn. Ich schrieb davor, ich als Künstler, ja, ich will einfach nur gleichsam mit dem Volk. Ich will nicht, dass das diese Wunderwaffe ist, wie Picasso, der seinen Pinsel hat, oder ich hier mein Mikrofon oder meine Schreibfeder, und dass ich dann ja viel attraktiver, sexier bin als andere Männer. Das will ich nicht, sondern reibe mich ein mit dem Dreck und will dann so ganz im Volk stehen und deshalb auch nicht Philosophie machen, auch sehr wichtiger Punkt, weil da stehst du ja immer irgendwie drüber. Das holst deine sauberen Begriffe raus und das Volk versteht davon ja nicht mal was. Und ja, da kannst du was vom Sozialismus erzählen, ist auch wichtig, wie Marlon Kohn, dass ja auf sehr gediegene und begrifflich jedenfalls durchdachte Weise tut, aber so ein Denker steht dann ja doch immer noch mal über dem Volk, weil er schon allein durch die Sprache, der er sich bedient, sich distanziert und dünkelhaft da ist mal absetzt. Und so will ich aber nicht mehr sein, steht hier. Und jetzt, genau deshalb tauchen wir jetzt hier ein, in dieses reaktionäre Bewusstsein. Und das ist genau dieser Punkt, wo jetzt das die Metapher kommt mit dem U-Boot. Und das finde ich eine sehr gute Metapher, nämlich vor allem der Druck von allen Seiten, genau wie ein U-Boot, das abtaucht und denkt, vielleicht jetzt ist es auch, jetzt kann der Feind es nicht mehr sichten oder so. Aber nee, gerade da ist ja auch noch die Gefahr. Ne? Von allen Seiten drückt das Wasser und vor allem dieses Wort hier, aufschlitzen. Das Wasser will mich aufschlitzen. Von allen, das ist es. Aber lesen wir hier nochmal weiter. Denn wichtig ist ja, dass es eine Metapher ist. Für mich, der ich auch untergetaucht bin in dieser Gesellschaft, eigentlich nicht erkannt werden will, aber ich sehe, der Druck, der Blick der anderen will mich aufschlitzen. Also, dieser Druck von allen Seiten, wie ein U-Boot tauche ich ab und bin doch nicht außer der Gefahr. Von allen Seiten drückt das Wasser und will mich aufschlitzen, wenn nur die Bolzen im Metallgehäuse halten. Und so auch der Blickdruck der Gesellschaft. Sie seziert mich neuerdings gar durch diese Theorien dieses frivolen Österreichers. Freud hieß er glaubsinnigerweise. Der Mann macht mir keine Freude, sondern rechte Angst. Wenn er das alles so wissenschaftlich daher schreibt, dann kriege ich das Gefühl, er will mir mit seinen Worten auch noch in die Intimzone greifen. Wir alle sind gleich darin, das sagt er, der österreichische Schlingel. Ich habe das Gefühl, was dieser Freud uns angetan hat, also das, es ist, wie wenn er den Instrumentenkasten der Regierung, die uns klein und gefügig halten will, um ein entscheidendes Zauberwerkzeug bereichert hätte. Der Anblick dieser Seziermesser und schrecklichen Gerätschaften kann der Menschheit nicht erspart bleiben, schreibt Nietzsche in Menschliches, also Menschliches. Aber dieser Anblick jagt mir Schauer über den Rücken, als sollte es mir gleich unter die Haut gehen, was die allmächtige Regierung alles präsentiert. Dieser Schreibstil ist nicht so passend hier, weil dieses Nietzsche-Zitat habe ich in Klammern und passt hier gar nicht hin in die Reflexion des reaktionären Bewusstseins. Aber ja, ist einfach so, das sind diese Seziermeister, das ist genau das, was Freud ausgepackt hat. Und das versetzt einem einen Schauder. Also ja, ist hier stilistisch noch nicht perfekt, vielleicht, aber weiter im Text. Vor Freud und seinen Sexualtheorien, da wusste man, man kann zum Regiment eingezogen werden, man könnte verpflichtet und kaserniert werden. Ja, das ist schon schlimm genug. Zudem auch in Friedenszeiten hat man Steuern zu entrichten, die Regeln und Gesetze des Staates zu befolgen, zur Schule zu gehen und eigene Kinder gemäß den Vorschriften der Sitte und Zeitlichkeit auf die Schulen zu schicken. Aber nach Freud ist alles anders. Wenigstens im innersten Kern meiner Familie, in den Armen einer herzensguten Frau, da wenigstens sollte man doch mal Ruhe haben und nicht mehr an dieses gewalttätige Gesellschaftsetwas denken, das uns belagert von außen und innen und unsere Handlungen, Schritte und Denkmuster verformt. Denkmuster, schrieb ich hier mit Doppel-S. Aber das geht jetzt nicht mehr. Gerade hier im innersten Kern werde ich ganz unruhig. Ja, das Begehren, das wohnt in meinen Lenden. Aber nicht nur in meinen, auch in denen meiner Frau. Und gar nicht vorzustellen, sie könnte einen anderen begehren, aber schlimmer noch, ich eine andere Frau. Und dabei wollte ich doch nur treu sein, nur der eine Mann sein, der die landläufige Rede von der männlichen Schweinigkeit und Promiskuität widerlegt. Aber das geht wohl nicht. Nach Freud sehe ich ein, dass ich willenlos den Trieben ausgeliefert bin. Und die Triebe, was die sind, sei mal dahingestellt. Mir ist dieser eine Trieb schon viel, viel zu begreiflich. Das ist ja unerhört, unerhört, sage ich, was dieser Österreicher angerichtet hat. Wenn man nur Augen und Ohren verrammeln könnte und alles zustopfen, verriegeln und rückgängig machen könnte. Die Historie wieder in die alte, tradierte Bahn zwingen. Jede Bahn, als das alte Preußen und das alte kaiserlich und königliche Österreich noch bestanden und sich besten Wohllebens erfreuten. Doch diese vorzüglichen königstreuen Staaten siechten dahin, dem Ungeist der Moderne zum Opfer gebracht. Und jetzt stehen wir da. Ende. Und in Folge 153, Bursting Femininity, Queen Diana genau, damals las ich das ja vor, ein Gedicht über, wie ich mich vorwärts wälze. Und ja, das war nur in dem gleichen Urlaub, meine ich mich zu entziehen. Im gleichen Urlaub in der Schweiz, wo ich genau das hier nämlich auch schrieb, auf der Rückfahrt dann, da war ich auch ein bisschen unter Druck, fühlte mich, oder man fühlt sich ja immer so einfach generell, wenn man zum Bahnhof fährt, ist immer die Frage, welche Entscheidung muss ich treffen, welchen Zug nehmen, wie viel zahlen dafür, oh Gott, hätte ich das nicht vorher buchen müssen, das war dann ganz schön teuer, 100 Franken oder mehr für die Heimfahrt, weil ich einfach nicht rechtzeitig gebucht hatte. Aber ja, man ist immer unter Druck, erwische ich den Bus hier, was denken die anderen Mitfahrer hier im Bus von mir? Und da war ich so, also so, dass ich mich von allen Seiten so angegafft fühlte oder jedenfalls den Blick der Gesellschaft auf mir lasten fühlte und da im Bus diesen Text dann zu verfassen begann. Ja, aber damit müssen wir auch sagen, es ist Schluss, es ist gut für heute. Leute, setzt mich doch nicht so unter Druck. Was erwartet ihr von mir? Was fällt euch ein? In mir wollt ihr schon wieder diesen Mann sehen, ne? Ich weiß genau, dass ihr schon wieder, ihr wollt mich dazu machen, wirklich zu diesem König, zu dem King. Aber es ist einfach nicht angemessen, sag ich euch. Das lasse ich mir nicht gefallen. Genau so werde ich mich sicher nicht anblicken lassen. Ja, ich wollte auch mal wieder auf Spanisch was vorlesen. Und ja, dann machen wir das doch einfach, ne? Also hier, hablemos un poco de español. Solo quiero leer un poema que compuse para mi novia y para mi ex novia de Perú, la peruana, que sí, siempre sentí que no trabajé lo suficiente para ella, obvio que para otras chicas que están lejas puedes sentir más eso de que estás en llamas, estás ardiendo por ella y por eso produciendo muchísimo y mostrando toda tu virilidad y masculinidad, pero eso no es tan bueno. Si, ¿qué puedo hacer? Ni idea que fue tan rápido, pero te lo agradezco que me hiciste, me casaste o me pescaste con tus redes de pesca. Pero ahí sí faltó un tiempo de idealización y no pude componer tantos poemas en ese tiempo cuando nos pusimos de novios, empezamos la relación. Por eso ahora escribí eso hace 3 semanas. Leamos eso. Primorosa, primera rosa. Mi novia es primorosa. Excelente. Fue la primera que amé y siempre pensé que yo no era digno de poner mi pene en una vagina, porque por eso hay que trabajar. En la vida nada es gratuito. Sin embargo, ella vino sobre mí como un huracán, me hizo temblar y derrumbó mis bastiones, me sobrepasó una tempestad femenina y no dejó nada en su lugar. Para siempre tendré su marca, la marca de su amor en la frente. Así de primoroso es el primer amor. Es natural. Una vez que estemos maduros, lo vamos a entender. Pero hoy somos juveniles, desafiantes, rebeldes y nos rebelamos contra la vida correcta. Y el amor contiguo, esa unión contigo, era espléndida sin duda, demasiado bella para ese mundo, en el que yo nunca me atrevo a cometer esos actos, arcos de un lado a otro, como en el acto sexual. ¿Cómo voy a cometer eso y utilizar la típica fuerza y violencia masculina contra ti? Es demasiado brutal. Por eso prefiero el amor mental. Solo un pensamiento más acá al final. Y sí, quisiera decirles eso a las chicas que entienden inglés, pero no importa, eso solo te voy a decir a vos o a los hispanohablantes, que ustedes, las chicas, son... no les tengo ningún rencor. No, por favor, no lo tomen demasiado en serio. Solo dejé afuera en los últimos episodios esa típica violencia masculina. Sí, esa dejé escapar. Pero lo que ustedes tal vez piensan que Simón algún día sí podría estar haciendo algo con nosotros, pasando una tarde, teniendo una linda cena, tal vez tomando un poco de vino, pero ahí piensan, o pienso yo, me pregunto ahora, es que si es realmente eso lo que quieren ustedes, o prefieren que solo grabe podcast para ustedes, y tal vez van a pensar entonces que están, sí, en este momento de la cena, están un poco enttäuscht, desilusionados, y pensarían, ah, no, pero ese no es ese chabón, ese tipo, como en el podcast, y nos serviría mejor que lo grabes todo en el podcast y nos lo diga así, de esa manera indirecta. Y no lo sé, chicas, piénsenlo bien, qué es lo que realmente demandan de mí, o sí. Yo demando... que ustedes sean mis sujetos y me demuestren que son algo que un hombre podrá admirar y hasta... adorar como en la religión, todo eso, como tu mamá decía, idolatrar, sí, algo como eso, chicas, les digo que sí, sean como Picasso, pinten o hagan lo que quieran, pero no vean, no dirijan sus miradas hacia nosotros los hombres, y por lo menos no tanto en ese sentido de pensar, ay, qué gran hombre, qué potente y productivo, no, porque ustedes también lo pueden y son muy inteligentes y saben cómo pensar y producir textos o lo que sea que les guste, pero hay que tener la autoconfianza, como también los hombres no la tenemos hoy día. Por eso me demoré tantos años en llegar a ese punto acá donde tengo desarrollado mi talento de actuar y de hablar. Pero ustedes tienen que ser así de malignas también y ser enfocadas en eso y decir que esa es mi voluntad y lo haré. Y todo el mundo puede quebrar, sí, que quiebre el mundo, pero lo importante es que yo siga acá haciendo mi trabajo. Y con eso les digo chao, buenas noches.